when I found my purpose, it was interesting. It fundamentally changed the question I was facing. The question was why, right? Why am I here? Why anything? And that changed to how am I going to do that?
So what you're telling me is if I discover my life purpose, everything in my life improves.
The question is, why are you here? And if you answer that question well, it will provide meaning and motivation and fulfillment. You will live longer. You have lower risk of stroke, lower risk of Alzheimer's disease. You'll have better relationships, better sex, and earn more money.
Hello, and welcome to another podcast episode of The Boundaries of Logic. My name is Idan Shelley, and today we have a very special guest. Tim Kelly is the founder and visionary leader of the True Purpose Institute. He works with the top leaders in many fields and countries to redesign and evolve society. Tim has trained over 1,000 consultants, therapists, and coaches in his methods. He's the author of True Purpose and the best-selling co-author of 3 other books. Tim, it's an honor to have you on this show. How are you today?
I'm delighted to be here. It's early here, so I'm still waking up just a little bit, but I'm here.
Yes, and I'm very happy to have you here. I actually, before we dive in into our conversation, I'd love to share with our listeners how I got to know you and how the incredible manifestation that brought us together for this episode happened. In the back of my head, for a long time, I have the idea to record an English podcast. I didn't thought it's going to be you, and you're the first episode in English. And
it's a result of my deficiencies in Hebrew. So,
yeah, and I was driving. I was on my way to class with one of my mentors, Doron Liebstein, which you also know. Yeah. And while I was driving to my class, I was listening to one of your podcasts, and I said to myself, you know what? It can be so cool to have Tim Kelly on my first English podcast. Maybe I can make this happen. And then I get to class and I ask Doron, and he said, yeah, like, of course, let me connect between you two. And then I was very happy and I know it's going to happen. But then we go back to class. That was on a break. Mm-hmm. We go back to class. We're sitting in class and we have the whiteboard presentation. And right after I said that, Tim Kelly is calling to Doron on a WhatsApp video, and we see your name there. And then, you know, during class,
right, Doron put me on in front of the whole class, which is fine. It wasn't the conversation I was expecting. So,
yeah. So that was, for me, it was amazing how manifestation works. And when you want to do something and you really believe it's going to happen, it was so fast. So yeah, that was amazing. And
well, you know, on the boundaries of logic question, there's that thing of synchronicity that Carl Jung talked about, which I realized was one of the boundaries of logic. So,
if I want to really know Tim Kelly, what are the most important stepping stones in your life that shaped who you are today?
Now, I often think in terms of formative experiences. Often the negative experiences are the most formative ones. Not always. But I do a lot of work with clients and students on core wounds from childhood. Very negative experiences that help psychologically and emotionally form the person's personality and ego structure. Turns out one of the first and most important ones for me, I didn't realize till much later how important it was when I was about 4 years old. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but I have this memory of my mother dragging me at high speed through crowded Manhattan streets. I grew up in New York City and thinking, where the hell are we going now? Because she was always doing these errands and stuff. She'd go help out like some family in the Bronx that needed clothing and food and stuff. And then we'd go shopping. We'd do this, we'd do that. And like many young children, I would ask, you know, why, you know, llama, 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 little kid. I didn't like the answers I was getting. They did not make sense. I was a very logical little four-year-old. And these answers did not meet my standards. And I figured out that the adults didn't know what they were doing, and that they were making it up as they went along. That's a good thought for a 16-year-old, but a very bad thought for a four-year-old. And like, oh my God, all these big people who are supposed to have this thing under control do not have it under control at all, thinks this little four-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And this was a disaster. And I took it very, rather than saying, like, my mother doesn't know what she's doing, I was like, none of them know what they're doing. They're all imposters.
At a four-year-old, you already notice that no one knows what they're doing.
Right. Right. I mean, they do a little bit some of the time, but like in terms of having a real plan, they're making it up as they go along. And to me, I can't remember all the details of the thoughts, but I can remember the emotions associated with it. And the feeling I got was that the world was defective, that this was an intolerable problem that had to be solved. And what made it worse was nobody else seemed to notice or mind except for me. You have to picture this panicked little four-year-old saying, but no one knows why they're doing anything. And everyone's saying, no, it's okay, kid. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. And I'm like, no, it's not going to be fine. And the reason I later realized how important that incident was because that set up a psychological need for purpose. And not just for a purpose for me, a purpose for everyone and everything. And it created this young psychological part in my psyche who was determined to fix this problem and had no idea how, and basically just bided his time, stayed in my unconscious, and hung out waiting for his opportunity, which came when I was 41 and had this revelatory experience of realizing how to find the purpose of anyone and anything. In this spontaneous moment, the what's now called the true purpose process just sort of came to me in response to me answering a question about my dreams and visions in a workshop. And just the whole method kind of spontaneously showed up, along with the mission to transform business from a profit-driven activity to a purpose-driven activity. Came to me at roughly the same time. And I realized, oh, wow, now I have this technique for finding people's purpose. And it turns out it could be used for companies or countries or anything else, too. We've used it for lots of stuff. And now that young part that got created when I was four was like, aha! And now he pounces and he's like, okay, now we're going to go find the purpose of everything.
You know, I'm so amazed by this experiences that happen to you in life, and you don't even notice them when they happen, or they don't have any meaning. But later on, and we're talking about like 30 something years later, this idea came back to you, and then you realized why it happened, and it's beautiful.
I didn't even realize all of the psychological stuff until like 4 or 5 years later, when I realized that I was being manic about manifesting my mission. Like, I had to manifest this mission. And I thought, why am I behaving like that? That's not how I teach this. I teach all my students and my clients that manifesting your mission is optional, right? This is the mission that, you know, if you want to have a really big impact, do this, right? Change the world in this way. But you don't have to. You can just go on about your business. It's optional. But I wasn't treating it as optional in myself. And so I went to my men's group and I said, I've got something going on in here. And we traced it back. And that's when I found that 4-year-old incident. I was like, oh, Oh, that's why it's not optional, is because that part of me is like, no, we're going to find that. We're going to fix the universe. We're going to find the purpose of everything.
You know, what interests me, because I have a blank right now of 30 something years, but I want to go back to that moment, because you had a regular life, other jobs, and then suddenly something happened that made you change your course and focus on purpose, finding your purpose and helping others find their purpose. So what exactly happened there?
So that 30-year gap, so there were two other incidents in there. One happened when I was six, and that was when I rejected religion, because that was an obvious place to turn for meaning and purpose, right? And my dad was a minister, so I was like in a church every week. And so we have this thing in Christianity called Sunday school, where the parents all go into the church to listen to the sermon, the preacher talk, and the kids all go in this other room with some adults who are sort of like babysitters, but they teach them some mild religious stuff, right? Read them little stories and have little games and stuff like that. And that's called Sunday school, where you get this sort of very rudimentary, basic religious education. I'm sure they do something similar in synagogues. So I'm in there and all these kids are, making little macaroni pictures or whatever. And I'm grilling the two teachers about these religious stories to make sure I get the theological implications right, They're like, kid, it's just a story. Relax.
At a six-year-old, you're trying to make sense of everything.
That's right, because I have to fix the world. So I need, if I'm going to use religion, I have to understand how this thing works exactly, right? And they're like, they're not theologians. They can't keep up with me. And so I concluded that religion was garbage. And I just threw the whole thing out. I was like, done with you. Done with my dad, who's a minister. Done with God. Done with the whole thing. Bah. And became an atheist at age six. And because I was very disappointed that it didn't have the solution to this problem I was trying to solve. And that lasted until I was 21, when I lost all of my motivation because my scientific universe that I lived in had no meaning. And meaning provides motivation. It's not the only way, but it's a very important way. And for me, a very important way. And so, and I dropped out of school and wound up in the Navy, and it was a whole mess, a whole balagan that took years to sort out. But basically, the whole time I was operating personally at a meaning and fulfillment deficit. So this is because of this four-year-old experience, I have a higher than average need for meaning in everything I do. So if someone says to me, "How, Tim, do this," I'm like, bip. Why? Because I can't necessarily motivate myself to do it unless I know why, which is a handicap. But so all through my 20s and 30s, I'm trying to solve this meaning deficit because I'm not getting it from religion, right? I'm not getting it from work. I'm not, where am I supposed to get all this stuff from? And it was during that period between like 21 and 41 that I realized that it was really that I was looking for a purpose. I didn't have a word for it before that. And I was desperate. And the techniques that people were talking about using, I was like, well, that's not going to work. You get some lame little answer or whatever. And so it was just this ongoing struggle that resolved when I had that experience when I was 41 and I had that kind of revelatory insight.
Can you take me back to that moment? What exactly happened there?
Yeah. So there's a woman named Maya Weider, formerly known as Marsha Weider. She's done some work in Israel. Some of your listeners may know her. She's a good friend of mine, and she leads workshops, and she's a very accomplished public speaker. And she and I were friends, and we would take turns taking each other's workshops. And it was my turn to take her workshop. And her workshop was called a Dream Coach Certification. And it was a training to be as a coach in her methodology for making people's dreams come true. And I was on class number 7 of 10 or something like that. And the question was, what are your dreams? And it was about 6 a.m. I'm sitting at the kitchen table. I was tired the night before, so I woke up early to do my homework the morning of class. And I'm sitting there at the table ready to write down my dreams. I have no idea what to write. And I never get writer's block. I'm very fortunate that if I decide to sit down and write something, I can always write something. And so I'm just sitting there staring at this blank page and getting more and more frustrated as time goes by and unwilling to show up to class without having done my homework. And all of a sudden, like it was like a dam burst and all this information came pouring out. I could barely write fast enough to keep up. And it wasn't my dreams. Dream is like what you desire to happen in the future. It wasn't that. It was my purpose. It came out. And I showed up at class shaking. Other people who remember that, it's like, Tim, you walked in, you were like, it's one of the things I learned was that when people really find their purpose, often the response is panic. If you get it right, it's like, you want me to what?
It's a big revelation. And
yeah. And so that moment, really the only word, and remember that I was not super religious, the right word for that experience was revelation. Because information that had been hidden was suddenly and spontaneously revealed from somewhere, right? That's the meaning of the term revelation in this context. And I was like, okay. And what I learned in that moment was, because before that I had seen myself as a seeker. And maybe some of your audience members feel like that. They feel like they're seekers. They're looking for something. And using various different techniques and teachers and schools and books, seeking. And when I found my purpose, it was interesting. It fundamentally changed the question I was facing. The question was why, right? Why am I here? Why anything? And that changed to how am I going to do that? That's the new question. Once the purpose is revealed, the question changes. It's like, oh. Now I know it's that. You want me to do what? How on earth am I supposed to do that? That's the response. Because as I said, the more accurate the purpose is, the more overwhelming it feels.
Yeah. So, okay, let's start from the basics.
Sure.
For everyone listening, what is life purpose? And do you believe everyone has one?
For sure, everyone has one. But let me say there's two points of view about that. Some people believe that a purpose is innate. It's already there. I may not know what it is, but it's part of me. And so a good metaphor for that would be like, I don't know what the middle of my back looks like, but it's already there, right? It exists. And so if I set up enough mirrors or something, then I can have a good look at the middle of my back and now I know. But it was already there before I saw it. Does that make sense? So,
yeah,
so, it is. So that's a feature. It's not something I didn't decide how I wanted the back of my middle of my back to look. It was already there. I just couldn't see it. So for some people, purpose is like that. It's already there. They can't see it yet and they're looking for it. There's other people who believe that purpose is a choice, like me being a math major. That was a decision. That wasn't something that happened to me. I had to fill out a form and check the little math box in order to become a math major. And so some people are like, no, a purpose is like that. You choose a purpose. But either way, everyone at least has the possibility of having a purpose, whether it's already there and you find it or you decide to choose one. Either way, it's available to everyone. The problem is it's hard to know what the purpose is that's already there. And it's hard to choose a really good one. It's hard to know which one to pick. So even though it's available to everyone, it's not easy. And let me answer your question. What do we mean by life purpose? I would say life purpose is the answer to the question, why are you here? Why do you exist at all as a human, as an individual human being? We could look at the purpose of a company or a country or other things, but talking about a person, the question is, why are you here? And if you answer that question well, it will provide meaning and motivation and fulfillment. You will live longer. You have lower risk of stroke, lower risk of Alzheimer's disease. You'll have better relationships, better sex, and earn more money.
So what you're telling me is if I discover my life purpose, everything in my life improves, all aspects.
Can improve. Now, you may choose to do nothing with it, in which case things won't improve. It's sort of like if I buy great vitamins and leave them in the bottle, I'm not healthier as a result. So you have to do something with the purpose to get the benefit of it. You have to take the vitamin. So if you know what your purpose is, that will provide you a brief experience of inspiration. But brief, like anywhere from several hours to several weeks. If you want the benefit of it, you have to take the vitamin out of the bottle and put it in your mouth and swallow it. And the way you do that is you take some action based on the purpose. You make some decision based on the purpose. And then you do it again. 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 And the more you do it, the more meaning and fulfillment your life will have. Now, there's one important caveat here, which is when you're doing something based on your purpose, it's not guaranteed to succeed. Some people get confused about this. They think, oh, well, if I'm manifesting my purpose, of course it will work. No, not necessarily. You could do it badly and then it won't work, right? You can make stupid decisions using your purpose and get bad results. It's not a guarantee of success. It can improve the odds of success, but it doesn't guarantee success. So you still have to use good judgment, right? So if you're launching a business based on your purpose, you still have to have a good business model and find customers and hire good people, right? It's no guarantee of success. But the odds of success go up. And part of the reason the odds of success go up is that people care about their purpose. And so they'll care more about whatever they create using their purpose, be more devoted to it, more intense about it, more energetic and more motivated about it. And therefore, it's more likely to succeed.
You know, I can really relate to what you just said, because when I discovered my purpose, and by the way, we have a very, it's funny because I'm looking at your story and your life story and experiences, and I find a lot of similarity. My life purpose is to help people discover their purpose and fulfill it. And this is why, you know, I got attracted to you, you know, automatically. So when I discover it, I remember, you know, the date and the time. That was when I had a coaching session with a person. And then we kind of discovered his purpose, and he was shocked. He was amazed. And I wasn't even planning to do it. That was not my goal, to help him find his purpose. But then at that moment, when he was so happy and so shocked, that he told me it was always here. Like, I knew it's here. I just didn't.
Right. I didn't know. Like the middle of my back, right? It's there already. I just couldn't see it yet.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I had butterflies in my stomach, like feeling, okay, I know now what I need to do. Like, this is my mission. Right. And I can tell you that since I'm doing it, like fulfilling my purpose, I'm feeling all the things you've mentioned before, like everything improves. But it's not just that, you know, I had a lot of goals to be rich, to make a lot of money. And that was like, you know, a first priority a lot of times in my life. But then when I discovered the purpose, which was already there, like I did it since I was young, helping people find their purpose. I just didn't have the name for it.
Right.
But now I know my focus, and all the other things like money, success, fame, whatever it is, they kind of go down in priority. They're less important. Of course, everyone wants to succeed. They want to make money, but fulfilling the purpose and helping others is now the first priority.
That's right. And you articulated it well. So the earning lots of money was a goal. Helping people find their purpose was a purpose. And so earning money is a fine goal. It's an excellent goal, but it's not a great answer to the question, why am I here? Right? It's for most people, earning lots of money doesn't provide a lot of fulfillment. It does provide other things like cool cars and you know, stuff like that. The ability to influence people in events through philanthropy or donating political campaigns. It's all sorts of things that come from having lots of money. But meaning and fulfillment is difficult to achieve just with money.
Does everyone have one unchanging purpose in life, or does it change as we grow? How do you help people find their purpose, whether it may be?
So is it one purpose or is it an evolving purpose? Similar to, is the purpose already there or do I have to choose it? There's two belief systems on this. And when I say there's two belief systems about these things, I've usually held both of those beliefs at different times. So on this one, the one belief is I have one purpose. I incarnated in this lifetime. My soul has a purpose for me for this time, and that's it. And it doesn't change. It may not even change in the next lifetime if someone believes in reincarnation. So that's one point of view. The other point of view is, well, everything evolves, right? I'm changing, I'm growing, I'm evolving, the circumstances are changing. Of course, my purpose evolves. Those are both perfectly reasonable positions to take, in my judgment, right? And it's pretty hard to prove one correct and the other incorrect. I'm not quite sure how one would go about proving that it's always this way in 100% of cases. That would be difficult to do. What the way I deal with this and most questions of belief is I say, hey, whichever one you believe, that's fine. Stick with your beliefs. Don't let other people distract you by telling you you're wrong. What seems to be true at a practical level is purpose statements evolve. So if I say, well, my purpose is to help people find their purpose, 5 years from now, that statement may not provide the same degree of motivation it did the day I found it. And I may need to alter or change or update the statement so that I get that powerful motivation that I am looking for and used to get. Is that because the purpose evolved? Or is that because the purpose stayed the same, but my wording of it improved? I don't know. Depends on what you believe. But either way, there's a maintenance activity you have to do of updating purpose statements every couple of years.
So from what I understand from you, you know, different people have different beliefs on their purpose. Some people believe it changes. Some people believe they're born with it. Some people believe they get it from life experiences throughout life. But your approach is saying...
Some people believe that it was God-given. Some people believe that it's their own personal choice.
So from your approach, it doesn't matter. Like if you coach someone, they come with their belief and then you guide them with their belief.
I ask them the same questions you've been asking me, which are great questions and show that you really know what you're doing around purpose, that you know that to ask these questions. I ask them these same questions and I take notes in my little Word document for that file saying, okay, this guy believes he's a Christian and he believes that God made him with this purpose. And that it doesn't change. Okay, good. This gal here, she's an atheist. She believes that she can pick any purpose she likes and that it could change as circumstances change or she evolve. Great. I can work with that. I can operate inside that belief frame. The issue that some coaches, people in your position or my position, run into when they're working with clients is I might have a point of view about that, right? The client believes that the purpose is a choice, and I believe it's inherent, and that you find it. Well, the wrong thing to do is for me to get in an argument with the client and try to convince them that I'm right and they're wrong, right? That's not going to lead anywhere productive. That's not a good use of the client's time. They shouldn't be paying me to try to convince them that they're wrong. So my job is to set my own beliefs aside and focus on theirs. Because they're going to find their purpose faster if I do the purpose discovery process inside their belief system than if I take the additional unnecessary step of trying to convince them that they're wrong and change their beliefs first before we start looking for the purpose.
So I've noticed that connecting with purpose, and we've talked about this before, often leads to remarkable shifts in people's lives. Mm-hmm. Have you encountered anyone who found their calling in a way that completely surprised them? I'd love to hear a story that you can share with us.
Well, usually by the time they make it to me, they're pretty motivated to find their purpose. Often, especially early in my career, often the people I worked with were people who tried lots of other things and had it fail. And I would offer them a guarantee. And they're saying, okay, Tim, I read this book. I worked with this coach. I took this workshop. I did all this stuff. And none of those things succeeded finding my purpose. And you're going to guarantee me that you're going to find my purpose. And you're going to give me my money back if you fail. I said, yes, that is correct. So we're absolutely going to succeed at this. So as a result, because I offer that kind of guarantee, I'm pretty creative, shall we say, and determined about getting the answer for people. It's funny. I mean, the way I tend to do it is I'm treating the purpose as unconscious information that we make conscious. How do we turn some information that we're seeking that we believe is there, either the purpose or the answer to the, for people who don't believe they already have one, the answer to the question, which purpose would work best for me? That, you know, if someone believes they can choose any purpose they want, that's the question. Of the billion or infinite number of purposes I could choose, what's the best choice? So either way, we're looking for some piece of unconscious information. And so unlike most folks, usually, and I don't know which methods you use, but usually most coaches, most workshops, most books use an inquiry method where you ask a bunch of questions and then you look for patterns in the answers. I don't like that method. The problem for me, and this goes to my math training, I was a theoretical mathematician. I tried being an engineer and I hated it. And the reason was that in engineering, if you can get it pretty close, we're good, right? The bridge isn't going to fall down. We don't need the exact number. It's okay. And it wasn't okay with me. I'm like, no, I want the exact number. So I did theoretical math where everything's precise. And so that, like, well, if the person answered these questions this way, then their purpose must be something like this. Sounded way too much like engineering to me. It's like, well, how do we get the exact answer? And the answer is, well, it's unconscious information. We have to go into the unconscious to get it. And how do we do that? Well, the unconscious is a really big place. There's a lot of stuff down there. According to people who study the unconscious, they say there's like 10 times as much unconscious information as there is conscious information. So it's easy to get lost. So my thought was, it's like, well, if you get into a big library and you don't know where things are, and you're looking for some specific piece of information in this huge building with like 100,000 books in it, what you need is a librarian. You need someone who can say, oh, you're looking for that information? Follow me. Come over here to shelf 138 and let's get this book right here. And, you know, you'll need to poke around in the book a little bit, but the information you're looking for is in there, right? That person just probably saved me a month of looking for that, right? Because they know how the library is laid out. And I'm like, okay, so what's the librarian look like for the unconscious? What knows where the purpose information is in this vast library of unconscious information? And what I discovered is that it's different for everybody. And so I'm asking them, in addition to, is the purpose already there or not? Does it change? You know, what does purpose mean to you? These sorts of questions. I'm also asking, well, who or what might already know what your purpose is, even though you don't? And the answer to that question, again, depends on the person's beliefs, and it's different for everybody. So some people, like I was talking about, very, very devoutly religious people, believe that God gave them their purpose. And I'm like, well, then in theory, God should know your purpose, right? Yes. So if we could talk to God, God could say, oh, glad you asked, your purpose is X, right? And now we have the exact answer. Now we don't need to go poking around the library. The librarian gave us the information. Well, but here's this other client who doesn't believe in God. Well, that's not going to work, right? We can't ask God her purpose because she's an atheist. So what does her librarian look like? Oh, for her, it's her higher self, some internal part that knows more about her life and her path and her unconscious than her conscious mind does. If you could talk to your higher self, would it be able to tell you your purpose? Yeah. Okay, good. Let's go do that. So that's another set of questions I ask, is trying to figure out within the person's belief system. And it seems like nearly everybody has something that fits the bill. For some people, it's internal. For some people, it's external. For some people, it's spiritual. Some it's religious. Some it's psychological. But it's always pretty much possible to define something that can perform that librarian function and find the exact purpose information from this huge pile of unconscious stuff and present it to the person's conscious mind. So the actual getting of the purpose in this technique turns out to be an interview rather than a series of questions that the person journals about. They're not answering the questions. The librarian's answering the question. And now you just ask them directly, great, what's my purpose? And the librarian says, it's this, like that.
Okay, so
now I bring this up because pretty much everybody is surprised. You asked when, how is it surprising for people? Pretty much everyone is surprised by this method. And everyone is surprised by their purpose. Although, like you said, often they're initially surprised by it. And then they go, oh, wait a minute. That makes sense. That must have been true all along. I can see how I was doing that when I was 5, right? Just like you said.
Yeah, so it's beautiful. And to clarify for our listeners, I want to first organize it in a way that they can understand, because we're talking a lot of things that, you know, from your method, people who doesn't know your method maybe doesn't understand what we're talking about. So in the way that you help people find their purpose, there are two methods: the indirect method and the direct method, which is right. The first one is the life experiences and whatever. Right.
What do I already know about my purpose based on my life?
Yeah. And usually it's not very accurate. And from your experience, it's not the accurate way to find your exact purpose. So
it gets very close and it's also very quick. That kind of method, you can get a purpose in an hour or two. And from the engineering standpoint, that's really good, right? If you can get an approximate purpose in an hour or two, that's a huge win. And for most people, that's enough purpose for them. And that was very important for me to realize when I figured out how this works, that most people don't need a super precise, accurate purpose. They're perfectly fine with an approximate one.
So they just need a direction to go in, so they'll know what their direction in life and how to make decisions.
Yep.
The other way is the direct method, which is tapping the unconscious and then mm-hmm. getting the information that is not in your conscious mind and then knowing the exact answer. And you're doing it through meditations, right?
Meditation, journaling, prayer, sometimes dreams as a last resort. So there's a lot of different ways of accessing the unconscious. I've known people who've done it using psychedelics. Psychedelics increase your access to the unconscious. There's a lot of different techniques. The two that seem to work best are journaling, and journaling not like where you're just writing down what you think. You're actually writing out a conversation with something that knows your purpose, and you're writing both sides of the conversation. So it looks like an SMS chat. That technique, and guided visualization, which is a form of meditation where I have them lie down, close their eyes, and I lead them through a series of images and experiences where they basically go out in the woods and meet this thing and talk to it about their purpose. Those two methods have about an 80% success rate if we've prepared for them properly. All the other methods have lower success rates.
Thanks to my mentor, Doron Liebstein, I had the opportunity to experience one of your exercises in class, find our being energy. Mm-hmm. And it was so powerful. I enjoy that so much. And I really love how it helped me to define it, and then it gives me like a clear direction. Then I know, like, whatever I do in life, if it's with in work, if it's in my relationship with my kids, with other people I help, I know my energy that I bring. And just to explain
mahut,
that
your essence,
my essence, yes. And to explain that to the listeners, so there is an exercise that we find our energy that we're bringing to the room without doing anything. Like, mm-hmm. if we're not talking, we're not doing any practice, we're just sitting there, what is our energy? And when you understand that, you know, what do you bring to every place that you go? And then it kind of gives you a direction on how to make choices and decisions in life.
Well, and you can turn up that energy. Like, I have a client who's a CEO, and his essence, his mahut, is I am a beacon of love. And so he found this interesting way to use that. He'd be leading a meeting with his executive team, and they'd get in a fight. And he would sit back and close his eyes for a second and say, I am a beacon of love, and imagine radiating love at the executive team, and the fight would stop.
You know, I had the same experience, not with my energy, but with my kids. There was one evening that I showered my daughter, and I have small children. And I was so tired, no energy. And we were, you know, fighting there. She doesn't want to go out. I want to go to sleep. And then I just stopped for a second, and I sat on the toilet, and I just meditate. I breathe for a few seconds, and I imagine how I release, like you said, like all the bad energy. And then it stopped, and she stopped, like in a second. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I can really relate to that story.
Yeah, being states have a huge effect. One of my mentors, this guy Keith Maron, wrote a book about consulting. And one of the things he says in the book is that consulting is half skill and technique and half your state of being.
For all the people listening to us and want to find their purpose, mm-hmm. what do you recommend? Where do you recommend to start and looking for their purpose?
Well, they should hire you, right?
Well,
seriously.
I hope so. But let's say someone is listening to us and they want to start exploring it by themselves at home.
Sure.
What are the exercises and tips that you recommend them to do to start and finding a direction in their life purpose?
It's actually something that's very difficult to do alone. I wish that weren't the case. I mean, I struggled doing it alone for a very long time. It's a little like doing brain surgery on yourself, right? Even if you were like the world's top brain surgeon, it's probably not a good idea for you to do it on yourself. It's probably best to get the second best brain surgeon to do your brain surgery than to try to do it yourself. The problem is that, well, there's a couple issues. One is that purpose is fundamentally a why question. Why am I here? And the brain does very poorly with why questions. In neurolinguistic programming, NLP, they train the practitioners, never ask your clients why questions, because it has such a negative effect on the brain. So as soon as someone starts thinking about what is my purpose, effectively asking, why am I here? The brain starts to malfunction. So it's important to know that, because people think they're doing something wrong. And it's like, no, you're not doing anything wrong. That's why people use those inquiry methods where they ask a bunch of other not why questions, like what would you do if you had a year to live? Or what would you do if you won the lottery? Which are not why questions. And they're not exactly purpose questions, but they're close, right? So that's why those indirect inquiry methods work, is because they're turning a why question into a bunch of not why questions to help their brain be able to come up with relevant information without locking up and shutting down. So first, most important is don't be upset at yourself for not knowing the answer. The second thing is don't be upset at yourself for not knowing how to do it. I don't know why this is, but people have an imagination that they should know how to find their purpose. They don't have an imagination that they should know how to fly a plane or do brain surgery or play the piano. Right? If they sit down and bang the keys on the piano and bad music comes out, most people aren't shocked. They're like, well, I don't know how to play the piano. I would have to take lessons. And then better sounding noises would come out. Yeah. So in the same way, you have to learn how. That's why I'm saying they should hire you. I'm saying that seriously, Don. It's not a joke. It's because sitting at home by yourself trying to find your purpose is likely to be a very frustrating experience. Now, in theory, you could sit down and write about what you'd do if you had a year to live, what you'd do if you won the lottery, the five most fulfilling, passionate experiences you've had in your life, and journal at length about all those things and look for the patterns. The problem is that you're not going to have as easy time finding the patterns as someone else will. Because the purpose is like the water you swim in, so it's hard to see. So if you showed that journaling to a friend and said, okay, name every pattern you can see in this text that I wrote here, they'll have a better chance of finding it than you will. But honestly, all of that is likely to be only partially satisfying and fulfilling. And because this is an exercise best done with someone who knows what they're doing and likely to produce suboptimal results if you try to do it on your own.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And it can be frustrating and it's not easy. And, you know, even though I help people, but I do recommend it, even if it's not me or someone else, like you're taking a coach or you're taking an expert in anything you do, this is your life purpose. This is like the most important thing in your life. For me, like, this is the way I see it.
I don't try to fix my own furnace in my house, right? If something goes wrong with my furnace, I hire someone. Yeah.
So your purpose, I wonder, how do you define it today comparing to if you go back where you were 41?
Yeah. So I'm going to use the mission. Like, we talked about the essence and there's other aspects of purpose. The one I think I want to focus on is the mission, because I already said what it was then, which was to transform business from a profit-driven activity to a purpose-driven activity, which at the time, you have to understand, back then I was a database consultant. So I was like working on people's databases, soft database software, and also a part-time executive coach. And that seemed absolutely impossible to me. I was like, you want me to what? Which, as I said before, is an indication of accuracy. The fact that it seemed overwhelming, now I know, looking back, it's like, oh, that was a very accurate purpose, because it freaked me out. I had no conception of how I would go about such a thing. Over the course of the next few years, I figured out different ways of approaching that would work. So I like went around and talked to, I don't know, 50, 100 different groups of CEOs about how purpose could help their company be more successful. At the time, no one was talking about it. This was 20 years ago. Now it's a huge popular thing. Now, that wasn't due only to me. There were a lot of other people who eventually started talking about it too, like Simon Sinek and Dan Pink and who's the guy from Whole Foods? I can't remember his name. But these conscious capitalism guys, all these different folks started talking very effectively about purpose. So it turned out I wasn't the only one. Important lesson there. And now business is turning into a purpose-driven activity. It's not all the way there, but, you know, like 20% done, which I would have never imagined that things could have changed this much in this short a period of time. That's stunning to me. And I was like, wow, I thought that was impossible. It's going really well. In the meantime, my purpose statement's evolved. The one I'm dealing with now is that my mission is to transform human society into heaven on earth. Transform human society into heaven on earth.
what that exactly means, heaven on earth?
Well, now that's an interesting question. You know. So, I have my own conception of heaven on earth, and you have yours, and they're probably not the same. And that's okay. So part of how that question needs to get answered is that we need to answer the question together. Mostly, we would probably agree that what we're doing right now isn't it. Would you agree with me on that,
yeah,
Adan? Right now, particularly in Israel,
yes,
you guys are not experiencing heaven on earth.
Yeah, right now it's more close to hell than heaven.
Closer to hell on earth, right? And the people in Gaza, absolutely experiencing hell on earth, right? We just had some U.S. guys killed yesterday in a base in Jordan. They got attacked. They're definitely not experiencing heaven on earth. So we can agree that we're not there. If we could agree on roughly what heaven on earth looks like, which actually wouldn't be that hard, then we for sure have the capacity to manifest it. And the reason I know that is that human beings have remade the earth several times already. We transform the planet all the time, not necessarily making it better, but we for sure have transformed. This planet would look very different if human beings had not evolved, right? We've made huge changes to it. So we for sure have the power. We don't have the vision of what it would look like, and we're not exercising our will to try to manifest that vision. But if you could imagine that you and me and the Israeli government and Hezbollah and Hamas and the U.S. government and the Iranians and the Africans and the Asians and the Europeans and all got together with the intent of coming up with a common vision of what would be ideal, we could agree on a lot of stuff. We wouldn't agree on everything. But if the question is what would be ideal, there'd be a lot of agreement on at least 80% of it. Right? Would it be better if people weren't starving and didn't have enough food? Yes. Right? Would it be better if people weren't getting randomly shot and killed? Most people could agree on that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's a long list of stuff we could come up with. Now, how to do it? A lot of people, they go, wait, that's not possible. It's like, no, that's not the question. The question wasn't, is it possible? The question is, what would be ideal? And if we can answer the question, what would be ideal, then the next question is, well, if we wanted to implement as much of that as we can, what would we do? Right? And if we devoted our power and energy to those activities instead of squabbling about where the lines are and fighting about which religion people should follow or who should be in charge of this, that, or the other, if we really spent most of our energy on that, things would get better very, very quickly.
You know, you talked before about finding purpose in business and mm-hmm. how people are starting doing it. And I have a dream that, you know, if you're coming to work in a company, they first ask you your purpose and then yep. they find a job that fits you and you're not like mm-hmm. interviewing for a specific job. Just imagine, you know, how many people would be happy and satisfied in their job knowing that they are going to fit the right job to whatever their purpose is.
Let me add to that vision, right? Now we're figuring out what would be ideally done.
Yeah.
In the area of work, that when I show up to interview for that company, they ask me what my purpose is, and then they tell me what the company's purpose is. And together we explore, how compatible are these purposes? Can I help the company with their purpose and can they help me with mine? And if the answer is they're not very compatible and we're not going to be very much help to one another, then I should probably work somewhere else. But if they're highly compatible and I can really help the company with its purpose and it can really help me with mine, then probably this is a place I should work. And then we do what you said, which is to say, okay, given that, given your purpose, the company's purpose, your skills and our needs, where do we want to put you?
Tim, where do you see yourself in 5 years from now?
5 years from now, my vision is that my primary business activity, the way I earn money to pay for my kids' college, actually, he'll be out of college in 5 years, but pay the mortgage and buy my wife nice things, is by finding the purpose of countries. And I've got several countries I'm working on, including Israel, on trying to get projects approved to work on a national purpose. I was actually doing pretty well with Israel, but you guys are a little distracted at the moment.
Yeah.
So this has had to take a back seat to some lower level hierarchy, Maslow's hierarchy needs like survival. That's correct logic, right? Let's make sure we don't get killed first and then we'll find our purpose, right? Because if we're dead, we don't need to know what it is. That's the right order of operations. But when this balagan with Hamas winds down, right, and there are at least fewer bullets flying, and people do a, you know, post-mortem to ask, how did this happen? What do we need to do about it? One of the topics that's going to come up really strongly, and it's going to come up inside Israel, Biden's going to be talking about it too, and Tony Blinken are going to be saying, okay, what now? And nobody has a very good answer to that question, right? How do we arrange things in such a way that this doesn't happen again? There's various answers being floated. None of them are great. I contest that the answer to that question is contained in Israel's higher purpose. That if we found Israel's purpose and then said, okay, what does that purpose tell us about what to do with Gaza? What does that purpose tell us about what to do with the Palestinians? That would lead to a better answer. And so I hope when that moment comes, I will be successful at getting that project approved to help you guys answer the question better. Because historically, you guys have answered those sort of questions from fear, right? How do we keep these people from hurting us again? Let's do this, that, or the other. But the things that are done from fear do not prevent these things from happening again. They actually increase the odds of them happening again. I don't know if that, I don't want to get too much into the politics. I'm not trying to take sides on politics at all. I'm not trying to say this is the solution or that is the solution. I'm talking about the process for getting to a superior solution.
What do you think is Israel's purpose?
You guys, I spent a good, I don't know, half hour, an hour grilling the AI bots about countries that know their purpose to see if there was any country other than Israel that had actual purpose statements. And as best I can tell, because I've looked and I haven't found any. And I grilled the AI bots for a while, seeing if I was missing something. And no. You guys are the only country on this planet that have actual purpose statements, and you have two of them, which is two more than everybody else. Now, they're a little old. It wouldn't hurt, you know, remember I was saying every couple of years it's a good idea to update the wording of the purpose statement. They're like 1,000 or 2,000 years old, so they probably need a little updating. But you guys have an essence and a mission. Those are the two aspects of purpose. Coincidentally, we didn't plan this. We talked about during this. There are four aspects of purpose I use. Those are two, Mahut and Shlichut, right?
Your essence Hebrew is good.
Toda. When I'm talking about purpose, I can talk lots of different languages. So the essence, the Mahut of Israel is Or LaGoyim, right? Light to the Goyim. And that's a state of being. That's not an activity, right? You guys just sit there and shine. Right? And often Israelis ask me, well, why do you guys care, this tiny little country? Why does everyone care about us? Why? We're the Goyim. You're the light. We know that there's stuff you're supposed to be doing that you're not doing. And we're very interested in you doing it, right? So, Or LaGoyim, that's the essence. And then the Shlichut, the mission, is tikkun olam, to fix the world. So your mission as a country, should you choose to accept it, because remember, mission is optional, is to fix the world. Well, thus far, you've mostly declined this mission. You've done it a little bit, right? You guys create some very innovative, cool stuff that helps other people in other countries. But mostly you guys, remember we said before about when people find the purpose and it's accurate, it's overwhelming. It's like, you want me to what? Right? Here we are, just a few million Jews on this little thing of land here, and you want us to do what? And the answer is yes. Yes, we do. The rest of the world is waiting for you guys to fix the world. And I believe that, like, my mission of transforming human society into heaven on earth is highly dependent on Israel fulfilling its purpose. Which is why I, this goy from Berkeley, am very interested in Israel updating, fulfilling, and manifesting its purpose, because I think that's the fastest way to get all of humanity to heaven on earth. Now, when I talk to Israelis and other Jews about this, there's a lot of this. Don't put that on us, right? Which is a reasonable, rational response to someone feeling overwhelmed by the scope of their purpose. It's a lot. And I'm like, yeah, it is. It is. And you don't have to do anything about it if you don't want to. It's just going to be a tragedy for you and the rest of the world if you guys don't fulfill on that purpose. An enormous missed opportunity at best, a horrifying balagan at worst.
I could just sit here and talk to you for hours, Tim. But before we say goodbye, I want to express my deepest gratitude for joining me on this journey. Your openness and honesty have been truly valuable. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Toda rabah.